Your support is important to Living on Earth. Donate today by pressing the donate link on the left of this page. Every bit helps, and thanks.
Evolution has slowly, slowly shaped life on our planet, with genetic adaptations arising over the millennia. But that's not always the case. Sometimes you can actually watch something evolve in real time. Ari Daniel Shapiro has our story.
When you keep red-shouldered soapberry bugs, that's Jadera hematoloma, in the lab, it's only a matter of time before one's on the loose.
Oop, great.
David Angelini moves vials and flasks to the side as he corners a female soapberry bug who's scuttling away. Angelini's a biologist at American University.
Here we go.
At last, he picks up the thumbnail-sized bug and places her on what looks like a mini air hockey rink. Low levels of carbon dioxide pour out of the little holes, gradually anesthetizing the bug. Angelini adjusts the focus of his microscope, and I peer down at her. She's beautiful. Her wings are a glittery black.
Yeah, it looks like asphalt after a rainstorm. It's very nice.
And right where her wings connect to her body are two flashes of bright red. Angelini's eager to show me her other side.
You can flip her over. Wow. She won't object.
She's that same bright red underneath, and she's got a lineup of little black appendages.
The antennae, the legs, the genitalia, the mouth parts.
These mouth parts are called the beak, and it looks like a long straw.
It looks more like an elephant trunk, honestly.
Except that it doesn't extend out in front. The beak tucks under a soapberry bug, pointing backwards. It works like a tiny syringe that can pierce the dark, round seeds of a plant called the balloon vine.
That's a cardiospermum, a native vine in Florida and the U.S. Southeast.
Before the balloon vine releases its seeds, though, they grow inside these leafy capsules, or pods, shaped like little balloons.
The pod is full of air. It's just the covering keeping bugs away from the seeds.
But the pods don't keep a soapberry bug away. It perches itself on the balloon, punctures the pod with its beak, and skewers the seeds inside. The beak's the perfect size to do the job, about 70% of the bug's total length. Or at least that's how big it was before 1950. Angelini and his graduate student, Stacy Baker, walk me across campus towards the chemistry building.
So right outside of that building is where the golden rain tree is.
The golden rain tree, or Colretaria paniculata, is originally from Taiwan. But around 1950, this tree, among others, was shipped to Florida for landscaping purposes. And the golden rain tree, it's related to the balloon vine. It has the same kind of leafy pods, except a little smaller. It's got the same sort of dark round seeds, and it wasn't long before the soapberry bugs of Florida started dining on them. In the last 60 years, golden rain trees have been planted throughout the U.S., as far west as California and as far north as Washington, D.C., in backyards, in gardens, and on college campuses, like American University, where Angelini works.
When I first started this, I had no idea how prevalent golden rain trees were. We started getting tips, so we drove all over creation looking for them. And then we discovered this one right on our doorstep, so...
Sorry, was that one of them?
Yes. So this is a baby.
The really large tree that's behind these hollies, that's a golden rain tree.
You know, it's funny, they don't look out of place. They blend right in.
I know, a Taiwanese tree, but here in D.C., you'd never know that it was anything special.
And as the trees have traveled the U.S., so have the soapberry bugs.
So this sidewalk and down by the base of that tree is where we've actually collected most of the bugs that we used.
Used, that is, back in his lab. You see, Angelini studies evolution, and something remarkable's happened to the population of soapberry bugs feeding on golden rain tree seeds. They've adapted fast.
It was discovered that their mouth parts were now about 30% shorter.
That's because the seed pods were smaller, and that's not all.
They were making more babies. The babies lived at a higher rate, and their flight muscles were also smaller. Basically, all this evolutionary change had happened in about 100 generations, so in about 50 years. And in evolutionary terms, that's remarkably fast.
Very fast, because if you think about evolution, we think millions of years, thousands of years. We can see it in a lifetime.
Baker and Angelini want to know which of the soapberry bugs' 15,000 genes have made these evolutionary changes possible. But it's not just about this bug.
I mean, it's easy to look around in the world and see biological diversity, and that arises through evolution. And what we really want to do is we want to be able to understand at a fundamental, at a genetic level, what is producing this diversity that we see.
Darwin's theory of evolution relied on observing species that had already diverged from one another. But the soapberry bug is an example of evolution in action, in the wild, and inside the span of a single researcher's career. Angelini wants to know all the genetic differences between the new population of bugs on the golden rain tree and those still living on the balloon vine in Florida. That's the big dream. But until then, he and Stacy Baker will go on corralling hundreds of soapberry bugs.
Got him.
Oh.
Nope, lost him.
For Living on Earth, I'm Ari Daniel Shapiro.
Ari's story comes to us from the series One Species at a Time, which is produced by Atlantic Public Media with support from the Encyclopedia of Life. Learn more at our website, loe.org. Living on Earth is produced by the World Media Foundation. Our crew includes Bobby Bascom, Eileen Balensky, Bruce Gellerman, Ingrid Lobet, Helen Palmer, Jessica Elise Smith, and Ike Sriskanjaraja, with help from Sarah Calkins, Gabriella Romano, and Sammy Sousa. Our interns are Daniel Gross, Stephanie McPherson, and Anne-Marie Singh. Jeff Turton is our technical director. Allison Learish-Dean composed our themes. And you can find us anytime at loe.org. And check out our Facebook page. It's PRI's Living on Earth. While you're online, check out our sister program, Planet Harmony, which pays special attention to stories affecting communities of color. Log on and join the discussion at myplanetharmony.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at Living on Earth. That's one word. Steve Kerwood is our executive producer. I'm Jeff Young. Thanks for listening.
Funding for Living on Earth comes from the National Science Foundation, supporting coverage of emerging science. And Stonyfield Farm, organic yogurt and smoothies. Stonyfield invites you to Just Eat Organic for a day. Details at justeatorganic.com. Support also comes from you, our listeners, the Go Forward Fund, and Pax World Mutual and Exchange Traded Funds, integrating environmental, social, and governance factors into investment analysis and decision-making. On the web at paxworld.com. Pax World, for tomorrow.
PRI, Public Radio International.